Roll call.
Roll call for Wednesday, March 5th. Anderson District 2.
Here.
Anderson District 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Amrick.
Here.
Esquibel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks.
Hines, here.
Johnson,
here.
Landon,
here.
Meyer,
here.
Nicholas,
here.
Nutting,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Schiffer,
here.
Scott,
here.
Von Flatern,
here.
President Ross,
here.
30 present.
Prayer by Pastor Huck.
Good morning. Yesterday at the AIPAC meeting, Benjamin Netanyahu ended a 44-minute speech with this passage. I would like to read it, and then I'd like to pray a principle out of this passage. Now, what I'm commanding you today is this. It's not too difficult for you, nor is it beyond your reach. It is not up in heaven so that you have to ask who will ascend to heaven to get it and proclaim it to the many and obey it. Nor is it beyond the seas so that you have to ask who will cross the sea to get it and proclaim it to us that we may obey it. No. The word is very near you. It is in your mouth. It is in your heart, so that you may obey it. See, I've set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I'm commanded you today to love the Lord your God and walk in obedience to him, keep his commandments, decrees, and his laws. And Father, I want to pray this prayer. It's from the Old Testament to, I know there's varying degrees of belief and love for you in our world and in this room. And I know there's varying degrees of obedience in this world and in this room. But Lord, your word says that if we trust you and obey you, that's the word that's in our mouth. So here's my prayer for each individual here that's been here during this session. They can trust you in their personal lives, obey you. I pray that our houses of faith and our houses of worship, that we can trust you and obey you. And certainly, Lord, in our government and in this chamber, that we trust you and obey you. I commit this prayer to you, Lord, and I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God,
reading, correction, and approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of March the 4th, 2014 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator James L. Anderson, Chairman.
I've heard the report. Are there any objections? Hearing none. The report is adopted. The doctor of the day is Christina Beringer from Cheyenne. There is no nurse for the day. Today in Wyoming history, 1992, the Warland Ranch in Warland, Wyoming, was added to the National Register of Historic Places. Quote for the day, duct tape is like the Force. It has a light side, a dark side, and it holds the universe together. Senator Kraft.
Thank you. Could I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
I would like to introduce the Senate to a couple of friends visiting today from Hillsdale. This is Sherry Kincaid and her daughter, Summer. I just met them a little bit ago, but I have to tell you, Summer is a woman after my own heart because she's got the coolest cowboy boots on you ever saw. So would you please welcome Sherry and Summer to the Senate?
Welcome to the Senate. Katie Heaton. Where is Katie Heaton? Katie Heaton, you're summoned to the front. Really to the front. Get up here. Folks, you all know Katie Heaton. Stand up here.
Yes. Thank you.
Katie.
That's enough.
Katie Heaton has been with us for 35 years. And she has been working behind the scenes a lot. She's actually my birthday soulmate. We have the same date, February 5th. And a special person, not only in our lives, but in my life. And we have a gift for you to commemorate all your service to the Senate. So here you go, girl.
Thank you.
And you can say a few words if you want to.
Speech.
It's been wonderful working with all of you and for all of you and shuffling a lot of papers. Do you want me to open this?
Yeah, I just want you to know that just because you're getting this present doesn't mean we think you're gone. We want your continued support.
You know what? That never entered my head. Never thought about that. I'm celebrating the 35th year. And it really has been fun. Beautiful people. That just drives a person crazy to death.
Picture me.
There's Tony and Katie. Thank you. That's beautiful. Beautiful. Oh, my gosh. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Hold it up.
That is beautiful. Thank you.
Friday. 82. Yeah. I'm chasing you.
Okay. Your messages from the house?
March the 4th, 2014, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading, passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file 24, special election revisions, ayes 60. Senate file 25, election code revisions, ayes 60. Senate file 67, Administrative Rule Streamlining, ayes 60. Senate File 68, Obsolete Laws, ayes 60. Senate File 89, Health Professionals Medicaid Billing, ayes 52, noes 8. Senate File 101, License Plate Vehicle Indicator, ayes 37, noes 23. Senate File Number 107, Certificates of Insurance, ayes 60. Senate File 115, Warrantless Searches Repeal, ayes 55, noes 5. And Senate File 83, Oil and Gas Operations Bonding Requirement, Ayes 35, noes 22, conflict 3. March the 4th, 2014, from the House of Representatives, message number 269, third reading failed. Mr. President, the bill listed below failed to pass the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file 86, obstructing roads and highways. Ayes 21, noes 39. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. From March 4th, 2014, from the House of Representatives, Mr. President, message number 271, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill number 88, post-dated checks, ayes 43, noes 17. House Bill 104, education, release of student information, ayes 55, noes 5. House Bill 173, schools, administration of epinephrine, ayes 58, noes 2. And House Bill 178, computer trespass, ayes 54, noes 6. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
You may, Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Dick, nice job with epinephrine.
Yeah!
Well, thanks to you, Senator. I've got a big thing here with it on there. So. Okay. March the 4th, 2014, from the House of Representatives, message number 254, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 10, Work Release Act repeal. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 49, noes 11. House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting listed amendments. You don't want these back. Okay. Message number 255, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 17, insurance electronic delivery of documents. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, noes 1. Senate file 48, cultural trust fund board membership. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 60. Senate file 100, business ready community program modifications. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 60. Senate file 31, 24/7 sobriety program. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, noes 2. Senate file 80, real estate licensure revisions. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 60. And Senate file 116, expungement of felonies. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 48, noes 12. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
You got some enrolled acts, right? Signing of enrolled acts. Senate Enrolled Act 45, being original Senate File 24, the reading clerk read.
Senate Enrolled Act number 45, being original Senate File 24, an act relating to special elections.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 45, being original Senate File 24. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 46 being original Senate File 25.
Senate Enrolled Act number 46 being original Senate File 25, an act relating to elections.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 46 being original Senate File 25. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 47 being original Senate File 67.
Senate Enrolled Act number 47 being original Senate File 67, and act relating to administrative procedures.
About to sign Senate Enrolled Act 47 being original Senate File 67. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 48 being original Senate File 68.
Senate Enrolled Act 48 being original Senate File 68, an act relating to the general revision of laws.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 48 being original Senate File 68. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 49 being original Senate File 89.
Senate Enrolled Act number 49 being original Senate File 89, and act relating to Medicaid.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 49 being original Senate File 89. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 50 being original Senate File 101.
Senate Enrolled Act number 50 being original Senate File 101, an act relating to motor vehicles.
About to sign Senate Enrolled Act 50 being original Senate File 101. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 51 being original Senate File 107.
Senate Enrolled Act number 51 being original Senate File 107, and act relating to insurance.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 51 being original Senate File 107. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 52, the original Senate File 115.
Senate Enrolled Act number 52, being original Senate File 115, an act relating to game and fish.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 52, being original Senate File 115.
Excuse me.
I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 53 being original Senate File 83.
Senate Enrolled Act number 53 being original Senate File 83, and act relating to oil and gas.
About to sign Senate Enrolled Act 53 being original Senate File 83. I have so signed. House Enrolled Acts. House Enrolled Act 42 being original House Bill 12.
House Enrolled Act number 42 being original House Bill 12, and act relating to speed limits.
About to sign House Enrolled Act 42 being original House Bill 12. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 43 being original House Bill 48.
House Enrolled Act number 43 being original House Bill 48, an act relating to fishing.
About to sign House Enrolled Act 43 being original House Bill 48. So signed. House Enrolled Act 44 being original House Bill 98.
House Enrolled Act number 44 being House Bill 98, an act relating to state investments.
About to sign House Enrolled Act number 44 being original House Bill 98. I have so signed. And House Joint Resolution 2, being original House Enrolled Joint Resolution 2, being original House Joint Resolution 5.
House Enrolled Joint Resolution 2, being original House Joint Resolution 5, a joint resolution to the United States Secretary of the Interior.
About to sign House Enrolled Joint Resolution 2, being original Joint Resolution 5. I have so signed. There's some concurrences, I think. Yes, we do. Senator Case, wait a sec here. There you go. Senator Case, are you ready on message number 255, concurrence request in reference to Senate File 17, insurance, electronic delivery of documents?
Yes, Mr. President.
The reading clerk will read in the message.
March 4th, 2014, from the House of Representatives, message number 255, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 17, insurance, electronic delivery of documents.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move message number 255 regarding the concurrence request for Senate File 17. Mr. President, this is a Corporations Committee effort. It came about to allow for people to opt in to receive all of their insurance documents and coverages electronically. Our friends down the hall removed a requirement that notices of dismissal or cancellation of policies actually be processed through the mail. So it was an amendment that was offered in our Senate Corporations Committee where it said, yes, you can have this system of electronic delivery of documents, but in the case of cancellations and notices of no longer coverage and non-renewal, you're going to have to get a paper copy in accordance with the insurance code. The problem, Mr. President, is that, first off, remember, this is a situation where people opt in to receive all their notices electronically. They already opt in. They can opt out at any time, but that's part of it. The second part is that there are three major companies that already do this electronically. One of them is a domestic company in Wyoming, and in essence what this does is change the rules for them for something they are already doing. It's kind of a philosophy thing. The Senate has always been a little bit slower to embrace technology than perhaps other folks are, but in this instance I really think since this is a voluntary opt-in process, and yes, insurance is complicated and things, but it's voluntary. I think that we should accept the changes offered and move this bill along.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I urge the Senate not to concur on this particular House amendment. Mr. President, and frankly, some of the local agents caught me I think it was the credit union or some other social events, and said, why are you even bothering? We can already do all the electronic delivery we need to and are doing it with the blessing of the insurance department. And, in fact, the department confirmed that. But be that as it may, you've got these major companies that think this will make it easier. The trouble is, Mr. President, that the What the amendment does is remove the requirement that if you're going to cancel or non-renew a policy or make major unfavorable changes in it, you've got to send them a written notice as well. And that's important. The agents that brought this to me initially said, look, what we're seeing is when there's a divorce, frequently the only way that one of the spouses gets the word that their auto insurance got non-renewed is they get the written notice because the other spouse was the one that was receiving the electronic. So it's important in that circumstance. And then, Mr. President, I happened to be in House committee waiting on another bill when this one was heard, and the insurance commissioner himself gave a personal example. He said he does all his insurance business electronically, including the payment. But it turned out his credit card had to be changed, got caught up in one of these mass identity theft things, and he hadn't realized that, oh, that was the card that the automatic payment was coming from, and it ceased to come. And he found it out suddenly when he got a written notice that his policy was about, auto policy was about to be canceled. And he looked, and it turned out he had a more vigorous spam filter installed on his computer, and the electronic notices were getting sent spam, and he wasn't seeing them. So that sort of thing can happen. And on these fundamental things where you're going to lose your insurance, I think having the written notice, as the current law does require, is well worthwhile. I think we could go talk to the House and probably get this removed. And if we don't, Mr. President, all the electronic things that really should be done can now be done, the delivery of policies and all that sort of stuff. So the bill in that sense, it wouldn't hurt to let it wait a year, wouldn't change very much. But I think it is important we maintain the written delivery of these fundamental cancellation non-renewal notices. So I would urge the Senate not to concur with the House amendments.
Further discussion. Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I urge the body to vote aye on this concurrence. It's very confusing to us that have volunteered, remember this is voluntary, to put electronic as my forms of communication. So if I get paper too, then I end up calling somebody and saying, I just took care of this, or why am I getting a notice a week later by paper? Did it not go through? So if it's voluntary and I elect to be electronically notified in all my dealings with them, that's the way I want it to be consistent. And yes, there's always that spam catcher that may catch a notice once in a while, but once you straighten that out, that doesn't happen. But I can tell you, your credit card always happens. When it expires, I'll get an electronic notice saying, your card's expiring soon, please give us your new card number or new expiration date, and that's fine. That is standard issue, but I cannot. It's very confusing to get a paper issued to me a week or so later. Remember, this is all voluntary. You can be all paper, you can be all electronic, however you'd like to do it. So vote aye for the concurrence.
Further discussion?
Question.
Question is that the motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 107, Insurance, Electronic Delivery of Documents. You've been asked to vote aye, and the Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
No.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
No.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
No.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
no.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
no.
Rothfuss,
no.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
no.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross.
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 20 ayes, 10 noes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 17, Insurance Electronic Delivery of Documents. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, may I have the privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, up in the gallery above you is part of the fifth grade from Pioneer Park School here in Cheyenne. They're visiting the legislature, and I suspect there's a couple up there that may end up sitting on this floor. Would you please help me make them welcome?
Welcome to the Senate. Mr. Vice President.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
May.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, you have the latest goldenrod on your desk. There's only two differences. One is sort of insignificant, but I'll point it out to you. On page 2, Senate File 11, the appropriation for the legislature, there was an amendment in the House that added $25,000 for more constituent allowance for larger districts, so that's reflected there. And then, Mr. President, if you go to page 4 under the school capital construction accounts, you recall an amendment yesterday that added $8 million to that bill, and you'll see that reflected where it says subtotal of $290 million, three-quarters of the way down the line. Mr. President, that amount went up to was at $282 million yesterday. Now it's at $290 million. And what that does, Mr. President, that takes $8 million away from money that would have tipped into the permanent land account.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Okay, Senator Schiffer, are you ready on message number 254, concurrence request in reference to Senate File 10? Work Release Act Repeal.
Mr. President, I am ready.
The reading clerk will read in the message.
From the House of Representatives, message number 254, concurrence requested. Senate File 10, Work Release Act Repeal.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I move concurrence on Senate File 10, Work Release Act Repeal. Mr. President, what happened over on the House side, and it was a good catch by one of the attorneys over there, deletes the reference to Wyoming Statute 186303 C, I, and then capital C. And inadvertently, that statute deals with a county sheriff's work release program. Inadvertently, we had included it, the elimination of that under the state work release program. It's a different program altogether. It's a county program. And what this does is cleans that up. And that was the I compliment my colleagues over on the other side for doing such great work in reading the bills. I would ask for you to vote aye.
Any discussion? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 10, and you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns,
aye.
Case,
aye.
Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Dockstetter,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Esquibel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer, Scott, Von Flatern, President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote close. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have concurred on message number 254 in reference to Senate File 10, Work Release Act Repeal. Senator Schiffer, are you ready on message number 266, concurrence request in reference to Senate File 31, 24-7 sobriety program.
Mr. President, I am ready.
Reading clerk will read in the message.
From the House of Representatives, message number 266, concurrence requested, Senate File 31, 24-7 sobriety program.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I move for concurrence on Senate File 31, 24-7 sobriety program. Mr. President, what the House did, and this is a choice, Mr. President will recall that on the Senate side, we said you're only eligible for this program on your second offense. What the House did is said, no, you can be eligible for this program on your first offense. That's the nutshell of what they did. Mr. President, I would suggest that if we're really going to get serious about substance abuse and treating substance abuse issues, this is one more tool that we have to work with substance abuse. This program will work on first offense. It is a severe program. It's closely run. What we saw in South Dakota, it does work. If it works, it's probably going to work just as well on a first offense than a second offense. The other thing I would suggest to the Senate is this is an alternative for someone who otherwise would probably stay in a jail cell. They may get bonded out. They may not. But this is an alternative, and it's an alternative with real consequences. We're going to check you probably twice a day to make sure you're staying sober. What I'm saying is, in a nutshell, I'm going to urge the Senate to vote aye. Let's accept it on so that the 24/7 program can be used on a first offense for substance abuse. I ask you to vote aye.
Vice President. Mr. Vice President.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I urge you not to concur. Senate made a very strong message. The testimony and the presentation by the good senator from Teton County was this program is designed to be implemented on a second offense. For most, 90% of the first offense DUI people, you never see them again. And to require them to have to go through this kind of program on a first offense, I just don't think it's appropriate. I think that we should stand by what we did. It is appropriate that the program as presented to us and as the amendment was submitted by the sponsor was that it was designed for second offense. I think that's appropriate. I urge you not to concur.
Further discussion? The motion of the Senate do concur. Senator Scott.
Vice President. Question for the proponents. As I read the amendment, it says the court may order. So am I right in thinking that if the courts use a little common sense, they will order this only when there's some other reason to believe that it's really needed in a first offense and that it won't be a regular thing? Or am I misreading the amendment? Is it requiring everybody?
Anybody else for their first time? Representative Senator Esquivel.
Thank you. Yeah, I would ask you to concur. The main reason for it is that even if a person gets caught for the first time, the statistics and what I've read indicates that the person has probably been driving around intoxicated for at least 30, 40, 50 other times, you know, so even though they get picked up for the first time, that doesn't mean it's the first time that they've driven intoxicated. So it might be a lifesaver. So I ask you to concur. Thank you.
Anybody else for their first time, for their second time before Senator Schiffer speaks? Mr. President.
Vice President, my understanding also in this amendment is that it goes and takes out, it's only for substance abuse. And I don't believe that DUI would constitute substance abuse. And so this may only be for drugs. And so you better be careful about voting on this, because you may not be getting your desired intent, which was primarily for alcohol abuse.
Anybody else for their second time? Senator Schiffer, for your second time.
Yes, Mr. Vice Chair, Vice President. And I'll try and answer the questions. In response to the first question, the judge may order it. It is discretionary on the judge's part if he wants to let someone participate in this program. That's up to the judge, which is where it should be. I agree. We've got good judges in this state. I did check on the wording for substance abuse. What I was told by the lawyers is that it does cover alcohol or any other drug. In other words, it can be, I don't know what, marijuana or any of those other drugs. That covers the whole gamut. If someone is picked up for abusing a substance, of which alcohol is one, but there are many, many others. So my understanding from the legal folks is it covers the whole range, and it is discretionary on the judge's part whether he wants to put someone into this program. I ask for your aye vote.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on message number 266 to Senate file 31. You've been asked to vote aye. The reading clerk, please read, call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
No.
Anderson District 28?
No.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Amrick?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines? Johnson,
no.
Landon,
no.
Meyer,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
no.
Rothfuss,
no.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
no.
President Ross.
No.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 9 ayes, 21 noes.
By your vote, you voted not to concur. The conference committee will be, Mr. President, Chairman. No, just a second.
What do you want to put?
I put Schiffer.
I think we ought to put you there. And Scott?
Let's put Christensen.
He didn't vote with you.
How many do I got now? That was the list.
This is the... No, Christensen didn't vote with you.
Just put Christensen.
Okay. The conference committee will be Senator Schiffer, Chairman, Mr. President, and Senator Christensen.
Senator Anderson, 28. Are you ready on message number 267 in reference to Senate File 80?
I am, Mr. President.
Reading clerk, read in the message.
From the House of Representatives, message number 267, concurrence requested. Senate file number 80, real estate licensure revisions.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, I move concurrence on House message 267, reference Senate file 80, and ask you please vote aye. These are minor wordsmithing changes, all vetted by the Realtor Board and Realtor Association. It was good work by the House and the tall representative from Natrona County. I ask for your favorable vote.
Any discussion? The message is, or motion is, that the Senate do concur on Senate File 80. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case? Christensen, Coe, Cooper, Kraft, Dockstader, Driscoll, Amrick, Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Hines, Johnson, Landon, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Platern, President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 80, Real Estate Licensure Revisions. Senator Nicholas, are you ready on message number 262 in reference to Senate File 100, Business Ready Community Program Modifications?
I am, Mr. President.
Reading clerk will read in the message.
From the House of Representatives, message number 262, concurrence requested. Senate File 100, Business Ready Community Program Modifications.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move message number 262, concurrence requested to Senate File number 100, and ask that you vote no. However, you may disagree with my recommendation, and I'll explain what the issue is. You recall, this is the bill where we're saying, let's take a look at the recapture dollars that go out from the Business Ready Community Program. Let's have local governments and as well as the Business Council report what the funds that they are doing locally and recognize their public funds, and so anybody can see what's being recaptured every year. I think it ought to be an ongoing requirement for the life of the programs. What the House did was said, well, we'll require an accounting for the last 24-month period, but not for 3 years ago or 4 years ago. And if you agree with that, if you think that, well, after 24 months, local governments ought to be able to just do whatever they want to do and there'd be no further reporting requirement after 24 months, then concur with the House side. I frankly believe that more discipline is required. These are public monies. They came out of the general fund of the state coffers, and people ought to have a right to know what's happened to our recapture dollars, how are they going to get used. If they get depleted, they ought to know that as well. So I'd ask you to vote no.
Senator Bebout.
Mr. President, I too would urge the body to vote no. And just to add on to what the majority floor leader talked about, as we look at this program, and there will be some ongoing studies just during the interim work if Management Council approves the Minerals Committee and the GAC and some ideas they have. But we ought to have a full picture when we look at this. And going back 24 months doesn't really reflect the entire program. It's a lot of money involved. We should see the whole picture. I would also encourage you to vote no.
Any other further discussion? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 100. You've been asked to vote no. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
No.
Anderson District 28.
No.
Barnard.
No.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
No.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
No.
Coe.
No.
Cooper.
No.
Kraft.
No.
Dockstader.
No.
Driscoll.
No.
Amrick.
No.
Esquibel. Geis,
no.
Hastert,
no.
Hicks,
no.
Hines,
no.
Johnson,
no.
Landon,
no.
Meyer,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Nutting,
no.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Rothfuss,
no.
Schiffer,
no.
Scott,
no.
Von Platern,
no.
President Ross.
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 noes.
The Conference Committee for Senate File 100 is Senator Nicholas, Chairman, Senator Meyer, and Senator Driscoll. Senator Burns, are you ready on message number 258 in reference to Senate File 48, Cultural Trust Fund Board Membership?
Yes, Mr. President, I am.
Reading clerk will read in the message.
From the House of Representatives, message number 258, concurrence requested. Senate File 48, Cultural Trust Fund Board Membership.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move concurrence on Senate File 48, Cultural Trust Fund Board Membership, and ask the body to vote aye. Mr. President, the folks down at the other end of the building, I think, are commemorating a former legislator who's no longer with us and decided to make a grammatical change by taking the exact same words and putting them in a different part of the sentence. Does the exact same thing as the bill did before, so I ask the body to vote aye and go with the grammar Nazis.
Even the motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 48, and you're asked to vote aye. Aye. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2. Anderson, District 28. Aye. Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins. Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have concurred on message number 258 in reference to Senate File 48, Cultural Trust Fund Board Membership. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, may I have the privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, up in the gallery above you, we have some more of the fifth grade from Pioneer Park School here in Cheyenne. I'd ask the Senate to make these young people welcome.
Welcome to the Senate. Do we have how many conference committee reports?
They're all mine.
We have a conference committee report. Senator Landon, are you ready on the Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to Senate File 3, School Facilities Collaborative Committee Process?
I am, Mr. President.
Reading clerk will read in the Joint Conference Committee Report.
Joint Conference Committee Report, Senate File 3, School Facilities Collaborative Committee Process, reference House Message Number 226, Senate File Joint Conference Committee Number 1. Signing for the House, Representative Wilson, Gere, and Winters. Signing for the Senate, Senators Landon, Barnard, and Nicholas.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move the Senate adopt the Joint Conference Committee Number 1 report on Senate File 3, and I would ask fellow senators that you vote aye on this. You might remember back to Senate File 3. That was the school facilities bill, which we brought to you regarding collaborative committee process. And that was just an effort on the part of school facilities to encourage our boards of trustees out there to involve their communities. What the folks down on the eastern end of the building did was to strike some language with regard to the purchase of land. And, Mr. President, we felt like that was an important provision in the bill. We thought that should remain in the bill. Frankly, that was the biggest change that they made. And I got to tell you, I took the good senator from Evanston with me. He swelled up and got really big, and he rolled them. And we brought the language right back to where it left the Senate. And so I really want to tip my hat to the good senator in front of me here. He blocked the way, and we ran it all the way down the field. We threw them a bone, fellow senators, and a little later in the bill, we allowed for a little bit of permissiveness in terms of how the makeup of those collaborative committees is to be put together. We allowed a may instead of a shall, but I'll help you understand that earlier in the bill, there's a shall that says you are going to put a committee together. We expect that. Down below, I think that really does actually help our rural communities out there. The concern on the other end of the building, Mr. President, was that they may not be able to gather up the people specific to all of those examples that we gave. And so I think the word may in there didn't hurt anything. But, again, a salute to my good friend from the Southwest, and we went over and rolled him a little bit. So I would ask for your aye vote.
Any further discussion? Motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to Senate File 3. You've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader. Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Vlaetern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 no.
By your vote, you have adopted the Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to Senate File 3. We're at that order of business, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Consideration of bills on third reading and final passage. Do you have a consent list?
I do. Mr. President, I move the following third reading consent list. House Bill 21, Property Tax Exemption Charity. House Bill 42, School Facilities Appropriations. House Bill 72, Omnibus Water Bill Planning. House Bill 102, Sagebrush. Sage-Grouse Implementation Team. House Bill 106, County Fireworks Bans. House Bill 128, Juvenile Court Sanctions. House Bill 137, Small Business Investment Credit Numbers of Employees. Thank you, but let me clarify, that was House Bill 135, Small Business Investment Credit Number of Employees. And House Bill 154, Exemption for Gratuities.
Would any member of the Senate like any of the bills, House bills on third reading consent list removed from the list? Hearing none, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 21, House Bill 42, House Bill 72, House Bill 102, House Bill 106, House Bill 128, House Bill 135, and House Bill 154. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel. Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Vlaetern,
aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. House Bill 21, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing, vote closed. House Bill 21, 30 ayes. House Bill 42, are there any changes?
Bebout,
aye to no. Scott, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Hicks, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Dockstader, aye to no. Burns, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 42, 22 ayes, 8 noes. House Bill 72, are there any changes? Closing vote. Meyer, aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 72, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 102, are there any changes? Closing vote. Von Slateren, aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 102, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 106, are there any changes? Johnson, aye to no. Geis, aye to no. Bebout, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Case, aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 106, 26 ayes, 4 noes. House Bill 128, are there any changes? Hicks, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 128, 28 ayes, 2 noes. House Bill 135, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Scott, aye to no. Geis, aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 135, 27 ayes, 3 noes. House Bill 154, are there any changes? Bebout, aye to no. Closing vote. Geis, aye to no. Closing. Perkins, aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 154, 27 ayes, 3 noes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, the following House bills have passed the Senate. House Bill 21, Property Tax Exemption Charity. House Bill 42, School Facilities Appropriations. House Bill 72, Omnibus Water Bill Planning. House Bill 102, Sage-Grouse Implementation Team. House Bill 106, County Firework Bans. House Bill 128, Juvenile Court Sanctions. House Bill 135, Small Business Investment Credit, Number of Employees. And House Bill 154, Exemption for Gratuities, have passed the Senate. Okay, House bills on third reading and final passage. House Bill 37. Reading clerk will read House Bill 37.
House Bill number 37, Revisors Bill, sponsored by the Management Council, and Act relating to revision of inadvertent errors, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have an amendment. Reading clerk will read in third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 37.
House Bill 37, third reading amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 9.
Senator, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 37. Folks, this is the revisor's bill. The staff picked up an additional error, which they occurred during the session and put this in. So it's the last error that they discovered. I urge your support of the amendment.
Is there any discussion? Hearing none, the question is, shall third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 37 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment's been adopted. Any further discussion on the bill? House Bill 37, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Coe. Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader. Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon. Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
No.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 no.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, House Bill 37 has passed the Senate. House Bill 73, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 73, sponsored by Representative Filer, Persons with Disabilities, an act relating to persons with disabilities, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Perkins.
Mr. President. Mr. President, I've read this bill, and while I'm very sympathetic with the purpose behind it, I've got some questions that I think I wanted to answer as I read it closely and thought about it. First of all, members of the Senate, as we look through it, it kind of starts out here, and you have these two definitions over here: competitive employment, which, if you read there, it means work in a competitive labor market that's performed on a full or part-time basis in an integrated setting, and which an individual is compensated at or above the minimum wage. So keep that in mind, and it also wants to be at, not only can it needs to be at or above the minimum wage, but it needs to be at a customary wage for individuals for similar work who are not disabled. So keep that in mind. Then you go down and look at the next definition of employment first, which means a concept to facilitate the full inclusion of individuals with disabilities into the workplace and community. An admirable goal. But then the next sentence requires, under the employment first approach, community-based integrated employment is the first option for employment services for children or adults with disabilities. Keep that in mind. Then you go down and look at the integrated setting, where it basically, as I interpret the integrated setting, it means that in our cities, in our towns, in our own communities, that the applicants, which would be the individuals who would typically be individuals with disabilities, it's going to be that they have the same interface or interaction with individuals who are not disabled to the extent that persons who are not disabled would have in the same employment opportunity. So keep that in mind. So then you go down to what the bill is doing. So then it says that employment first, which we now know means this policy to employ these individuals, disabled individuals, is its first option, I'm on page 3, lines 14 and 15, shall be considered its first option when serving persons. When considering its first options when serving persons with disabilities who are working age to obtain employment. And then it says employment first. Remember where the employment first comes from in the second definition we talked about. Employment first applies to programs and services that provide services to help and support obtain employment for persons with disabilities. Then comes an important sentence, I believe. All state agencies shall follow this policy to ensure its effective implementation in their hiring in all programs and services administered or funded by agencies. As I read that, that would include, I believe, grants and aid, Mr. President. I believe it would include the Series 100, which would be the general employment funds that we have in agencies to be employed inside those agencies. Would also include Series 600, which are the contract services. So not only would it be the state, but you're talking about people who are employed, who receive grants and aid from any agency in the state, as well as those who provide contract services. So then you go down here, and it says, interestingly, then it says that on line 22, starting on line 22 on page 3, nothing in this section shall be construed to require any employer to give preference to the hiring of people with disability. I just wonder how that works when we say before, above this, that it shall be the first option, and also it is to be effectively implemented in all programs and services administered or funded by agencies. I don't know how those two work, Mr. President, where we have a first option. It's directed that it shall be effectively implemented, but then it's not to give preferences. I don't understand how that works, and so I'd appreciate some explanation about that from the sponsors. Also, going over to page 4, it talks about, again, we're talking about this requirement that all agencies shall coordinate efforts and shall collaborate with and among agencies to, again, ensure, which is mandatory language, to ensure that state programs, policies, procedures, and funding support competitive and integrated employment of individuals with disabilities. Then dropping down below to the bottom of the page, and I think that the rest of this seems to me fairly appropriate, although I would just point out that at the top of page 5 we say the governor shall, which we have this discussion quite often, Mr. President, about whether we can make that kind of mandatory language as violating separation of powers, but nevertheless I think the rest of that is not bad. But as I look at that, I'm concerned here about, as we do this, that if we're not going to, that what the effect of the bill is, unless I'm misunderstanding, Mr. President, is to create basically a preferential hiring for individuals with disabilities. And so keep in mind that these are the same folks, so we're talking about a preference for disabilities in jobs that individuals without disabilities need to pay families, to pay for schooling, to support themselves, to pay their rents. They also need those jobs, Mr. President. And so unless I can figure out how to reconcile this in my mind, I don't know how I'm struggling with how I would vote for this bill unless I'm misunderstanding it. I have a tremendous number of concerns about, while I'm very sympathetic and think it, the idea to move individuals' disabilities into full employment and to get them involved, and certainly, and basically the assumption is that they are willing and they want to work, folks with disabilities. I think that's a great assumption, but when we get down to the devil that's in these details, I'm wondering how it works, and I've got a number of concerns, and if we could have those addressed before we vote, I would really appreciate it.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, and I've got some similar concerns with this. If we go to page 2 and we look at some of the language in here in line 11, it says, but not less than the customary wage, which my first question is who determines what the customary wage is? It doesn't specify who makes that determination. It says they'll be compensated at or above the minimum wage, but not less than the customary wage. I don't know what that is, so a little discussion along those lines. We move down to page 2, line 19, and it talks about employment is the first option. And I think it gets to some of the inconsistencies the good senator from Natrona County was talking about. At one point, we're talking about options and the definitions. But when you flip over to page 3, it says that you shall do this. So my question is how can it be optional, but yet you have to do it? So there's a question on when it says, well, it's an optional program, but you must do it. And here's something I would like to point out to the body is this little bill establishes policies, hiring policies for the state of Wyoming. If you go to page 3, line 13, it says, shall be the policy of the state. And is that the state and all of its agencies or state and all of its subdivisions? And how far out does that reach when we talk about the state? I'm not sure what that does. Again, as I read through that paragraph on page 3, section N, those are provisions that are mandatory. It's not optional. And then we get down to the bottom of that paragraph again. And what it looks to me like that does is, and some clarification if I'm wrong, but not only is it provide a preferential hiring, it's a mandatory preferential hiring provision in that section N. I guess the other questions I have is when we look at some of the conflicting language in here that if we can get some discussion on page 4, just again, I think there's some inconsistencies here. If you go to page 4, line 1, it says agencies shall coordinate efforts and shall collaborate. Folks, I would tell you the very definition of collaboration is not something you force somebody into. So I look at those type of inconsistencies through the bill, so I just like some additional discussions. I do think this is a major policy paper that we need to be very careful with and would like to hear some discussions along those lines.
Baron Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. My question is probably a little bit more on an elementary level, which the other night we were running late. We really didn't have an opportunity I think, to fully vet a couple of these things. I work for an agency that in which there are two or three individuals with disabilities, very good friends of mine, and I'm really, really proud of them, enjoy working with them. And I guess I'd like to know, I just don't understand how the system works now and what this bill would change when we already have employment opportunities for our disabled, and maybe a little conversation about what we have now and what exactly this bill would change. Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. A little bit that's going on, folks, and you'll probably hear it if you've got one of these outfits that does some recycling or some trash sorting or different things like that. The department, for whatever reasons, has decided that that's no longer something that they want to do. And it's taken away the employment opportunities that we currently have now. And I think that, and I haven't talked to the sponsor, but I know that that's the actual case of what's going on with the department. And that's probably the reason for a lot of these shalls, because if you say may to the Department of Health, you'll get exactly what they want to do and not what you want to do. So, you know, it might be an overuse of some of the shalls in here, and I could see where people would have some reason for some concerns in some of these areas. But the reason is to for specific direction. So these employment opportunities that the disabled have had, continue. So, you know, maybe the language isn't perfect, but I think the intent is where it needs to be. And I don't think we're going to have a lot of mischief between now and whenever we may have to see what the results of this would be, not to pass this thing forward.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, on and against this bill, I was a no vote in the committee, and I over the last 30 years, I've dealt with the workforce services. They've done a good job of bringing disabled to the public, private employers. We hired a lot of them. They were good employees, just like the senator from Casper said. They were good employees. They did a good job. I don't think there's a problem, but I have a problem with all these shalls and musts and first options and demanding first options. I don't like that on page 3, line 14, 15, or anywhere else in the bill. The other thing I don't like is the page 5, where we demand that the government convene a task force. We do this, and it's already being done with the Wyoming Workforce Services. They do a good job of making this happen. So I think this is a bill looking for a problem, and I fear what the problem might be that they're thinking about. I urge you to vote against this bill.
Senator Nutting.
Thank you, Mr. President. Speaking for the bill, I had some of these same concerns going into this until I heard testimony in committee. And the employment first means that handicapped people or disabled people are to be encouraged to look at employment as an option when they come to these state agencies rather than just receiving other services from the agencies. It also sets up the task force so that there are people designated to help disabled people in applying for a job, because many of them would like employment, but they really don't know how to go about it. A lot of employers would like to hire disabled people, but they don't know how they can incorporate them into their business. And so the task force would also help employers. This is a federal or a national program, not a federal, a national program, Employment First, and other states who have adopted it have the expenses of doing this, these services for disabled, have been met completely by donations from businesses themselves. So businesses themselves have financed the mechanism of giving these services to disabled people and to potential employment. At no time is it intended to replace other people in the workforce or to give any preference to disabled people over anyone else applying for a job. And those disclaimers are made pretty clear in the bill. So I support it.
Senator Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, I think we've gone down this road many times in the past. And I think the purpose of this bill is to get us, get the employers, get society to look beyond the person's disability, to get away from our initial assumptions of people that have disabilities and look at them as a potential employee. And when I mentioned that we've gone down this road before, you know, it wasn't that long ago where there were certain jobs that were strictly for men. Women do not apply. There's been other jobs that if you were over a certain age, forget it. And we still have some remnants of that, but there's been age discrimination, gender discrimination, other types of discrimination. You know, it wasn't too long ago where the only people that would be hired to be, well, they were called stewardesses then. And you had to be at a certain age and you had to be of certain characteristics. And finally we got beyond that so that finally men were able to become flight attendants, as we're called today. But I think it's a way to try to get our society to look beyond a person's disability and realize that they do have a lot of potential. Yes. Would it be easy? Probably not, but then change is never easy. So I would ask you to support this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I appreciate the concerns from the good senator from Natrona County and from Carbon County, and I think that if you read it from the standpoint of what can the government do, so to speak, I see the concerns, but looking at it from the standpoint of having worked with the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities for the last couple of years, and perhaps understanding this program a little bit better, it isn't things that go bump in the night as much as it appears. Employment First is an initiative, and it's a concept initiative, which is why concept is used in the discussion and the definition specifically. And what it is it's the idea that the folks with developmental disabilities, folks on the waiver, are better off in a workplace environment. They're better off in an integrated workplace environment. And the difference there, the concept there, is right now we do have programs with workplace environments, but they tend to be, we're going to develop a workplace over here, for example, shredding paper. We're going to bring in folks that are on the waiver. We're going to receive a subsidy. We're going to have them shred paper for $1 an hour all day long. Workplace, it's probably better than not doing that, but the reality is, functionally, it's not the supportive environment that these people would like, would be better off with. And again, the dominant phrase here really is that page 3 at the bottom, nothing in this section shall be construed to require any employer to give preference to hiring people with a disability. If I could write that 20 more times in all the rest through an amendment, if we had a fourth reading to do that, I would be perfectly happy to, because there's no intention of displacing jobs in this. The idea is this concept that there are situations where it would be appropriate to take somebody who's on a DD waiver, somebody with a developmental disability, and put them into a position where they would be just as functional as somebody else who could do that job. And in doing so, we enable them, and realistically, we save money for the state, because the alternative would be a day hab program that's going to bill at $36+ per hour. So the idea of putting together a program that simultaneously helps these individuals to have a better life, to learn skills, to contribute, to have a better quality, a better feeling about themselves, to integrate that into our government, and to make sure that it's part of what we look at. In other words, the agencies are saying to themselves, hey, this position here, I might want to consider that position as something where I bring in employment first concepts. And we say shall in this legislation. It's true, and perhaps we say it too many times. But the reality is the agencies aren't going to be looking at this program unless we really implement it as a state government. Other states, one on the West Coast, for example, has achieved a 76% employment rate for folks on the developmental disability waiver in that state because they've implemented a program like this and other similar programs. Those people have real paying jobs, higher qualities of life, and it's not a preferential hiring process. It's just a concept that we will look. We will try and find ways to integrate them into real employment instead of specialized employment, the paper shredding, the other labor where we separate the individuals that with disabilities, we give them simple tasks, but trying to look to a bigger picture. When you think about it in terms of this work first or this employment first concept, again, it's not an intent or intention to displace or take away jobs or provide any quotas or preferential hiring or anything else. That clause does dominate, and it's supposed to be very clear that under no circumstance would you provide any preference. But you should at least consider, could this job be done by somebody with a developmental disability? Let's consider that. Let's consider taking part in the Employment First program as a state so that we can bring them into a meaningful job that pays similar wages. And the similar wages concept, again, is not a requirement. There's actually federal exemptions that allow you to pay sub-minimum wage under certain circumstances for the developmentally disabled. It doesn't make that requirement anywhere in this proposed statutory change, but it says try to make them employed in a comparable position at a comparable wage if they're doing comparable work. There's nothing wrong with that. It basically means if they can do the job, pay them for the job. Don't have them shred paper if they can be the person who greets you when you come into the restaurant. Have them greet you when you walk into the restaurant and pay them the appropriate salary for that position. There's nothing more to it than that. There's certainly no intention of trying to pull a fast one, trying to create preference. And I wish we had an opportunity to really fully explore those concerns and address them. But as we know, this is kind of the home stretch here. I'd be certainly happy to look at this in the future, to discuss it more. The task force is supposed to look for ways to integrate that. I believe it would be something that we could talk about during the interim, and if there are any additional considerations that we could put into place to safeguard against the concerns that my colleagues are worried about, I'd be happy to look into that during the interim. But this is a great program. It's been implemented in other states successfully, achieving, as I said, a 76% employment rate in another state. It's good for the developmentally disabled community. It's good for the state of Wyoming. I urge the body to support this legislation.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I think the goals of this legislation are clearly laudable. It is amazing what individuals with disabilities can do if they put their minds to it. My model in this area has always been a member of this legislature who was confined to a wheelchair, but was bound and determined not to let that disability slow her down 1 minute. She earned a living outside the legislature. She served here, Mr. President, both as a lobbyist, which is how I first got to know her, and then as a member of the other house with honor and distinction for a number of years. And she had a strong determination. Now, in the nature of human nature, there will be other people whose drive and determination is not quite so great. But if we give them a little push, a little help, they too will be able to succeed in employment. And there's a lot more dignity in being able to earn your own way as opposed to sitting back on the dole, which the disability is just severe enough you can do. And if it's really severe, you have to. But I have a little of two minds of this bill coming into committee. because I read some of the language, and then I read some of the exceptions, and it was contradictory enough that my instinct was, well, this is just another just feel good. But the testimony in committee was that in the other states that had tried it, that really had made a difference. And so on balance, I thought, even though I didn't like some of the mandatory language, thought there was some risks to it, I thought that it was probably better to proceed with it. It would probably do more good than harm. But it does have that contradictory language, the mays and the shalls that are then contradicted by the provisions that say this is all optional. So vote it up, vote it down. I don't think in Wyoming, with the way we do things in Wyoming, it will do harm. I think on balance it will do more good than harm. It is certainly pointed in the right direction.
Further discussion. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the Senate. This has been a great debate, and I too wish we had had this opportunity a few days ago to really discuss this in depth a little bit more. And, you know, I think there was a lot of testimony that I had written down that I wanted to say that certainly was stated very eloquently and certainly could improve on it. I just want to, all I really want to do is just hit a couple of points that seem to be of concern, and that's the employment first, and that this shall be a policy. And just remember what you heard here. Employment first is an initiative. It's a national initiative to get individuals' disability to encourage employment first, to get them off of entitlement programs and into employment. So we're saying should be the policy for us to say we want them employed instead of on state programs. And that's what Employment First is, and that's what Employment First, the national initiatives, have done. I didn't know a lot about this either until I sat in the committee, and, you know, we heard from the Department of Workforce Services and from the Department of Labor and others that are named in the bill. And if you look at that on page 5, what this is doing is developing that task force of not any legislators, but to have those agencies bring together the programs that we need to develop employment first for people with disabilities, encourage them to get off of state assistance programs and get them into the market. And it was stated the competitive wage is simply saying if there's a competitive market, pay them the competitive wage. And there's nothing more. I don't think there's, as the tall senator from Sweetwater or from Natrona said, you know, there's a lot of good here. It does a lot of good. The agencies need this ability, and it's unfortunate they don't really talk to each other without something, but this is that conduit to get the agencies together to put together the criteria for Wyoming to be part of Employment First for people with disabilities and get them off of state assistance programs. That's really all we're trying to do, so thank you.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. I certainly don't want to belabor. This has been an excellent discussion and debate, and many of the points have already been made, but there's one that hasn't that I really want to talk about. And I heard a lot of concern about first option, and that it says in the bill first option. And how can we not be preferential when it says first option? Let me explain what first option means in DD language, if you will. Go back to school and talk about least restrictive environment in a school. What that means is if I have a student who's in special education, the first thing I look at is, can that student function in a regular classroom? If that student can, the student goes into a regular classroom. If the student can, if that student has an aide in there with him helping him, that's what happens. If there is no way on this earth That student can be successful in a classroom. That student does not go in there. That student stays in a special education setting. That's exactly what this is. The first option is, can that individual function in a work setting? Maybe yes, maybe no. If they can, great. If they can't, then we find other places, other options, other opportunities. But that's what first option means. It doesn't mean you have to do this first and you have to take these people. It means you explore the least restrictive options first, and if that doesn't work, then you kind of move down the gradation, if you will. So that's one point I wanted to make. The other point that I heard that I don't think we addressed was, we can do this right now. Why do we need this? We can do it right now. We could, but we don't. And I would submit to you that we don't because we don't have the information. I'll give you just one little example, and that's a thrift shop in my community. And they really wanted to help. They really wanted to do some things. They didn't know how. And it just happened to be one of the private providers that said, I got people that can sort clothes for you. And they sent a couple over. They turned out to be great clothes sorters. They get paid the exact same amount the other clothes sorters get. But they would never, ever, on their own, have said, let's try some of this. So this brings the agencies together. It brings employers, employees, people who do want to help. Do want to, but they don't know how. This provides some structure. It provides some standards for that. I would remind you again that this bill does not require anything. It doesn't require an employee to hire. It doesn't require an individual to go out and find a job. What it does is encourage placement in the least restrictive environment. I believe these people deserve that. I have seen the benefits not only personally but economically in my own community, and I would urge your support. Thank you.
Further discussion? Question's been called. House Bill 73 having been read three separate times. The question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
No.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
No.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
No.
Coe.
No.
Cooper.
No.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
No.
Driscoll.
No.
Amrick.
No.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
No.
Hines.
No.
Johnson.
No.
Landon. Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
No.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Christensen, no to aye.
Johnson, no to aye.
Cooper, no to aye.
You guys.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 19 ayes, 11 noes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, House Bill 73 has passed the Senate. House Bill 169, third reading. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, may I have the privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, you got a lot of fifth graders in this town. Members of the Senate, seated up in the gallery above, Mr. President, are some more fifth graders from Pioneer Park School. They're spending the day at the legislature and learning about all the stuff we do. Please, they're a wonderful set of kids. I went up and visited with them. Please make them feel welcome to the Senate.
Welcome to the Senate. House Bill 169 having been read three separate... third reading of the House Bill.
Well, some of them I don't like as well as these kids.
House Bill number 169, sponsored by Representative Davidson. Medicaid Waiver Programs Case Management System and Act Relating to Medicaid Waiver Programs, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have some amendments. Reading clerk will read in third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 169.
House Bill 169, third reading amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 1, line 4.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 169 and ask the body for favorable consideration. Mr. President, this is a tricky topic. You may recall last year we passed some good legislation, in my view, where one of the components in how we would handle Medicaid waiver case management was that we would require conflict-free case management. That was to make our statutes consistent with federal requirements in new rules that were being promulgated to require that conflict-free case management, which is essential. Basically, what that means is that you can't simultaneously provide services and manage the case for the same individual, because you can imagine the conflict there in terms of conflict of interest, where I would be prescribing services that I would then fill, which is handy. It's a good gig if you can get it, Mr. President. And we were concerned about that. The feds were concerned about that. We passed legislation that would stop that. Now, since our last meeting a year ago, you may have received a couple of letters, perhaps an email or two, expressing concern about what we did with conflict-free case management, because it turned out it wasn't so easy. The reason it wasn't so easy is you have people who have case managers that they've had for 15 years, 20 years. You have situations where you have rural communities and there's no ability to have a case manager that's not the service provider under certain circumstances. There's new education requirements that are coming out. Those requirements have made it difficult for some people to continue. So, Mr. President, what we did with a couple of amendments in consultation with the original author of this particular piece of legislation and some folks that have served on the Labor Health Committee was try and put together some compromises that leave intact the conflict-free case management system, but allow for some certain exceptions when it's appropriate and while we're trying to negotiate the waivers. So when we look at third reading amendment number 1, Mr. President, what this does is basically call for some requirements to the extent practicable while we're negotiating our new waiver with the Medicaid services. And you can see in line 6, it says, in negotiating a waiver pursuant to this subsection, the department shall, to the extent practicable and approved by the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And then in Romanet 1, it allows an individual or agency to provide case management and direct services to different clients if those services are provided under conflict-free circumstances. This was, in my view, the original legislative intent. In other words, you can't provide both case management and services to Bill, whoever Bill may be, Bill, but you could provide case management and services to different people as long as there was no financial gain in it for you or your corporation. That was what we intended, but that is not how it's being carried out. That's caused great concern. This clarifies what I believe to have been our legislative intent, and I hope we can support that clarification. Romanet 2, Mr. President, indicates that we need to have some transition time as we roll out our new education standards so that we don't just cut off all of the people who are currently managing cases and would not be able to do so under the education requirement. So it lays out a 3-year transition period and also asks for consideration of experience as a case manager to count towards that education requirement. Mr. President, these are a couple of simple exceptions. There'll be a couple more clarifications in the next amendment, but at this point I'd invite discussion and clarification on this particular amendment, and if there isn't any, I would ask the body for favorable support.
Senator Escobel.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. You know, the conflict-free concept is very, very attractive, and, you know, I think I understand it to some extent, but I was just wondering, in what way is this different from many situations that we all find ourselves in, such as the attorney-client relationship, physician-patient relationship, contractor-homeowner relationship? You know, they're performing a service, and they're the ones that are usually recommending what is needed. So I just wonder, how is this different from some of these other situations we find ourselves in? There's Scott.
Mr. President, let me first seek to answer that question. The case manager here is in a particular circumstance of being able to help the clients find the services they need, help them decide what services they need based on their experiences as a case manager, and then steer them as to where to find it. So they are in a particular circumstance where they need to be independent, because if they work for an outfit that's also providing the services, they can go out and market quite vigorously without appearing to be marketing, without raising the red flags that a salesman would. And that's the bill, as it came to us, I thought was a very bad bill, because it was seeking to preserve the existing system, which in my judgment was costing us big money. Leaving the federal requirements aside, it was one of the reasons our Medicaid budget was out of control. Mr. President, looking at this amendment, I get nervous about adding too much to this bill. As it stands before us now, we've modified it enough to let the department be sensible in the small town circumstances where everybody's related to everybody else we discussed about in Committee of the Whole. The 3-year transition in the second bullet point, now that relates just to the educational standards. Apparently, and the department did not, to my knowledge, discuss this particularly with your committee, but apparently they're in the process of implementing a certification thing where there's a bunch of educational requirements, a 3-year grandfather on those educational requirements, I think, enables them to be sensible in the implementation here. I particularly like Section 2, the report. That's probably selfish on my part. It would mean Committee 10 has to listen to another year of special interest pleading. And it would burden the department with another report. Mr. President, the conflict-free circumstances, I think I know where they're going, but you sure want to make sure that if their case manager is working for an agency, he can't recommend clients to that agency. And I'm a little concerned about that, although I think it's probably all right in terms of how it would actually be implemented. Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, on balance, I think this amendment probably will be helpful rather than harmful to the department in how it implements this very needed effort to get the independent case managers.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a question, and I'm trying to under the number little I, line 15, where we say to discreet, I'm trying to understand how the department will react to that word and what that really means relative to putting it into statute.
Further discussion before the sponsor takes a second time. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Although I understand the efforts here on this amendment, I'd ask the body to resist. Fellow senators, we last year came up with a pretty good bill and gave marching orders to our department to implement these changes, as my colleague has referred to. Coming from appropriations on to labor and health,
during the interim, hearing 12 months of testimony of G, we can't redesign Medicaid waivers. We can't do this. We can't make these changes. It's hard. And it is hard. These are tough things. I mean, I spent the last interim hearing these testimonies, these families and providers. And I mean, if you sit there and listen to it as I have for the last 12 months, you'd think the sky was falling and the world was coming to an end. These are tough. These are tough decisions, tough adjustments. Cuts are painful. But we gave the marching orders to our department. So, like good soldiers, they went ahead, gave us the reports, findings, facts, figures, and they make recommendations. And then the phones start ringing, the emails start chirping, and we as a legislative body get weak-kneed and say, well, we didn't mean that much. We didn't mean that far. We didn't know. So, although the intent is good, the three-year transition period, in one of my committee meetings, Mr. President, over in the good town of Lander, I stood up and I said basically the same thing. We gave the marching orders to our department. My hat's off to the department. We have a director in that agency now that's trying to get a handle on this budget. They receive their marching orders from the feds. They receive their marching orders from us as a state legislature. We back off. We ask for another report. I think this is up to 20 different reports of this agency. Mr. President, we're going to have to build another building, hire more staff just for our reports. I got a stack back home at my desk in my office that's this high of Department of Health reports. I've read maybe that much of it. I mean, it's overwhelming, to say the least, to our Labor and Health Committee, to our department especially. They're frustrated, and I don't blame them. I would be frustrated, too. I get marching orders. I go out and do my job, and then I get slapped on the back of the head saying, we didn't mean that. We didn't mean go that far. So I'd ask you to resist this amendment.
Senator Hicks.
President, I'd like to divide the amendment.
Okay. What's the proposed division?
Division 1 would be line 3 through 20. Division 2 is going to be line 22 through 30. Mr. President, with that, I'd call for the question on Division 2 and ask the bodies for a no vote.
So you want to make Section 2 your first division?
Correct.
Okay. It is divisible. So we're on lines 22 through 31 as Division 1. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, in all seriousness, on and against this division, the only thing I would add to what we heard from the good senator that's the sponsor of this bill is that it's not 20 reports. It's better than 30. Management Council, your Committee 10 is asking you for authority to go eliminate some of those reports, go look at them because they're not all needed. We're putting quite a burden on our department. The 30-plus figure may include a few from Family Services as well, but we're getting way more reporting than we need, and I think it will just continue the opposition by the interested parties.
Further discussion on Division Number 1. Senator Meyer.
Division Number 2, Mr. Chairman.
Section 2, lines 22
that's
through
number one.
31
yeah,
is number
yeah,
1.
Mr. Chairman, I do want to speak to Section 2. And, Mr. Chairman, it was referred that we can't get a waiver. Well, Mr. Chairman, that just isn't the case. There's a state up in the Northwest that has a waiver. It has a waiver for every Medicaid population that's out there, including blind and disabled. And those are folks that are the young folks, the old folks, the poor folks, and the rich folks, all in DD. There's a waiver. And that how they did it, Mr. President, if you go to your website, and I can't say the name because it's a proper name on the floor, but I can direct you to the website, and it walks you through what they did to go to CMS and get a waiver. And how they did it, Mr. President, is that they established metrics, they established performance measures, and other evaluation standards deemed appropriate in securing waiver flexibility. So it can be done. Yes, it's hard. And it's a lot of work. But it can be done, Mr. President. But you have to decide what you want. Now, we did a one-size-fits-all thing last year, and it was directed by the feds that basically said that we know there's a problem with the fox being in the hen house and these guys being case managers and working for the providers. And we all know that. And we did a quick cut of that. But, Mr. President, the way to look at it, if we look at it like the other state did, and we develop the metrics and the performance standards, then we can get a waiver on practically anything we want to if we can sell it to CMS that the abuses are not occurring. And as far as reports, if somebody wants to complain about reports, it should be the Appropriations Committee, but we don't because it's our job, and that's what we get the big bucks for. So, Mr. Chairman, on and for the amendment.
Mr. Senator Peterson, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. Many of us received an email from a lot of the providers or case managers out there suggesting that we had problems with this bill, and I guess it comes down to a matter of trust. Do we trust our agency to address the problem that we might have in these rural areas with conflict case managers, conflict-free case managers, or not? And obviously, these amendments are saying, we don't. We don't. So we're going to nudge them a little bit further in that direction to make sure. And that's okay. That's all right. But again, just a little bit of history. This one case manager sent an email. What caught my eye was it was completely different. Serving as a case manager in a larger agency in the state, he said that he was expected to do anything that he could to see to it that the agency received as much of the funding as possible. And he gave an example. If a participant missed a day of residential services, this caseworker was required to modify the plan to move the missed dollars to another service provided by the agency. In other words, keep that agency in the black. Now, that's your Medicaid dollars at work. That's what's going on. So we all know the reason why this conflict-free case management system needs to be implemented. We all understand the problem in our rural areas, which is a lot of the state, but a blanket waiver over the state, such as the Northwest state has done, I don't see we need that. I mean, where there is an opportunity to make that change, we need to make that change to conflict-free case managers. That's the intent. I think this was a vote this up, vote this down, Mr. Chairman. But again, realize the original intent of this Enrolled Act 82 of last year and what we were trying to do to get a handle on this particular part of the budget. So, again, I would ask you to support this, vote against this, take down this division, number one.
We're on division number one. Further discussion, Senator Anderson.
Division number one, two?
That's correct.
And I ask you to vote against this. We do not need any more reports, and we're trying to limit the number of reports we're getting.
Any further discussion on this division? Senator Meyer.
Quickly, Mr. President, to actually implement the frontier waiver that you guys are talking about in the rural areas that's in the current bill, the department's going to have a basis to justify that. And simply the basis is the metrics, the performance measures, and other evaluation standards. So just to get that part of the bill implemented that's already on the books, the amendment, it's going to happen anyway. This just says that they have to do it and report it back to you guys so you can understand what those measurements are so you can agree on them or disagree on them. otherwise are just going to implement it. You might know what they are. You might not know what they are. But it's going to happen irregardless. But the thing is that you'll know what they are. And this tells you, everybody, how they're going to implement the rule areas that you've already got in the bill.
Question is on division number one, which is lines 22 through 31. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That portion of the amendments failed. We're on division number two, which is lines 3 through 21. Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, I'd like to ask you to not vote for this division number two. This is a federal rule we're dealing with here that was mean-spirited for rural and frontier populations. We have a small population. A lot of them are related. The recipient might not even know he's related, third cousin to his provider. We heard from caregivers, providers. We heard from all of them, and they're all trying to do the right thing. We're trying to do the right thing with 169, and we don't need more help with it in this Division 2. Thank you.
Further discussion on Division 2 before the sponsor takes his time here. Senator Raffles.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and for Division 2. Mr. President, this particular amendment actually is intended to help the very situation that my good friend from Natrona County is discussing. It was drafted in consultation with the original sponsor of the legislation, recognizing that we were given a one-size-fits-all solution when obviously that isn't what works for Wyoming under all circumstances, because we do have the rural situations and the family situations and all of these other difficulties. It allows, Mr. President, some flexibility, first of all, consistent with what I considered the original intent of the legislation. Certainly it's what I thought I was voting for last year, which is that an individual could provide services and could provide case management, just not to the same person. We don't want the wolf in the hen house. We don't want somebody grading their own test. We want to make sure that it's conflict-free, but without precluding an individual from doing both of those two things. And we also want to provide some flexibility from the education standpoint, recognizing that new rules are being put forward. We can't achieve those rules as quickly as I think some people would like to see them. So this provides a little bit of additional flexibility in a bill that is looking to provide flexibility, recognizing that a one-size solution is not going to meet all needs. To address just a couple of the points that we heard, first of all, the good Vice President was concerned about the language discrete. Discrete in this context specifically means individually separate and distinct. So it means two different people, distinctly different people that you're providing services or offering case management for in that context. And that's the unique and specific meaning of that particular word. As far as the fact that these are tough concepts and that we've taken a step, that's absolutely true. Mr. President, I support conflict-free case management. I think it's the right thing to do. I supported the legislation last year, but I can't help but realize we caused some concern over the time period since we passed that legislation. This does not stop conflict-free case management. This just provides some flexibility that allows for individuals to work within the current system, continue some case management, some services, and provide some flexibility with the education requirement. It makes the situation a little bit better, a little bit easier to live with for the folks that have to live under it. And, Mr. President, I'd urge the body to favorably support Division Number 2.
Question is, shall Division Number 2, Third Reading Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 169 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment's passed. We have another amendment, Third Reading Amendment Number 2, to House Bill 169. The reading clerk will read it.
House Bill 169, Third Reading Amendment Number 2, to engross copy, page 2, line 6.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this continues on the same concept but takes it a step further, which is why it's a different amendment. And I wanted it to be a different policy decision, Mr. President. This adds to the previous amendment a Romanet 3 and a Romanet 4, which provides a request that additional flexibility be included in the negotiation. It's easily divisible if the body wants to do so. But what it does, Mr. President, in Romanette 3, is provide for the continuation of any current individual case manager relationship with conflict-free third-party supervision or designated representative as required. So what that means is it's a recognition that you have people who've been working with the same case manager and services for, say, 15 years. It says that we want to provide some waiver opportunity for that individual to continue that relationship, but they would have to have a conflict-free third-party oversight for that relationship. So we're not trying to eliminate the conflict-free aspect of it because we've got this disinterested third party that's going to be looking over the case, but it allows a continuation of that relationship. It wouldn't allow for new relationships to be developed that way, but previous relationships to be respected and continued. For a lot of these people, that relationship is an important part of their life. Change is a difficult thing under those circumstances. We obviously have an economic interest in making sure there's conflict-free resolution of this, but for us to break up that relationship is a difficult challenge, something that's best avoided in some circumstances. If we can put in place a process or at least request the existence of that process while having a third-party manager, I think that would be a reasonable approach, Mr. President. Romanette 4 requests additional flexibility under the waiver to allow for situations where you have small providers, family providers, rural providers, and individual case managers, again, subject to conflict-free third-party supervision or designated representatives. We have small communities where you don't have enough case managers and providers that they don't end up being the same person. This request is for a waiver. To be perfectly honest, it may well be denied, but it requests that we try to get a waiver to allow us additional flexibility in how we manage these small communities and small situations to respect that we just have a different system. It would require some work by the department in negotiating that waiver. It's certainly a challenge, Mr. President, but it's something that we've heard a strong need for in this state. It recognizes that we have a different system in the small communities than we do in the large communities, and the same system isn't going to work for both of those situations, Mr. President. I'd urge the body to support second reading. I don't think I've moved it, Mr. President, so I'm going to do that now, a little late. I would move third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 169. I'd ask the body for favorable support, and I'll sit down.
Any discussion? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll be brief. Folks, if you look on line 5 of the original bill, the wording is already there that the department shall implement a system using a neutral third party to ensure no conflicts exist. So we start talking about this third party involvement already in the original. So I guess my only comment is on and against this amendment. If you didn't like the first one, you really shouldn't like this one. We tried to get rid of the grandfather clause in the original bill. That was the poison pill for a lot of people that had concerns about this, including the department. But providing for the continuation of any current individual case manager relationship, that's the grandfather clause all over again. So I'd ask your opposition to this amendment.
There's Scott.
Mr. President, on and against this amendment, I think this is clearly going a step too far. The previous amendment made me nervous, although I was supportive. This one makes me nervous to the point where I think it's a bad idea. I think the bill does cover the situation adequately. This just adds push to continue the existing system and to double pay to get real case management services. I don't see any point in it, and I'm afraid it will be used as a weapon to continue some of the abusive practices that we're seeing out there right now. I urge the Senate to defeat it.
Any further discussion? Senator Kraft.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I don't want to belabor. I know we want to dispose of this, but I do want to address a couple of the issues. I am, of course, speaking on and in favor of this amendment, simply because when we enacted Senate File 60 last year, our idea was, as my good colleague said, to get away from the fact that you don't get to grade your own paper. And then when everything came back to us, we discovered that we had done that, but to the extent that we were really hurting small independent providers from small, especially rural areas. So hence comes House Bill 169 attempting to address that. Now, when I spoke with the primary sponsor of House Bill 169 this morning, she indicated this was exactly what she'd had in mind, and she really hoped we would support this amendment, because what it does is it says you can continue those case management positions or individual positions in these small areas, but with the supervision. We're quite afraid that if it does not go forward with this amendment of third-party supervision or designated representative, we will be denied anyway, and we will be right back where we started, which is really with nothing. So I would urge your support of third reading amendment number 2. Thank you.
Senator Perkins.
Mr. President, on and against the amendment, as I look at this, it appears to me that this amendment is one of those exceptions, Mr. President, that will swallow the rule. And ultimately, it's one of those things that if you look at that, the continuation of any current individual case manager relationship, that means everybody from now on. That's a grandfather clause. That means everybody who's out there now gets to continue their relationship. The only condition is, though, now we're going to have a watcher watch the watcher. We're going to have conflict-free third-party supervision. So now we're going to have another level of supervision, and that's what we're doing here. And, in the end, this puts the bill back almost to where it was as it came to us. And if it's on there, I can tell you, Mr. President, if it's on there, this is, as the bill stands now, I'm going to hold my nose and vote aye. If Amendment 3 passes, it's a definite no. Thank you.
Further discussion before the sponsor takes a second time. Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. President, I certainly respect the concerns of the body. I appreciate the discussion on this. We have a situation where there just are difficulties out there, relationships that are established. It makes a big difference to these people to continue those relationships. I recognize that there's a great deal of concern with continuation of these. The third-party supervision waiver request would certainly be structured in a way that it would provide for that continuation of the conflict-free aspect. I certainly didn't hear any discussion or concern with Romanet 4. Maybe it's out there. But I'd ask the body to give this some serious thought, support this amendment. I think it's the right thing to do for the people who are on these developmental disability waivers, protect those relationships, and continue our support. Thank you, Mr. President.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 169 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment's failed.
Question on the bill.
Questions on the bill. House Bill 1769 have been read 3 separate times. The question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
No.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
No.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Geis. No.
Castor.
Aye.
Hicks.
No.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting. Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 26 ayes, 4 noes.
House Bill 169, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the Senate, House Bill 169 is passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I move the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Heard the motion. Wait a minute. Any announcements? Senator Scott.
Mr. President, immediately on recess, can I meet with the members of Committee 10 at the back of the room?
And Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your Select Water Committee will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Management Council will meet at 1 p.m. in room 302.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number two appropriations will meet in 10 minutes in S11. All of you be there, please.
And Senator Von Flater.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Transportation Committee, as well as your TRW Committee, would they meet right at adjournment up in S14? Recess right now up in S14.
Okay. Any further announcements? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. The Senate stands in recess until 2 p.m.